So what is going on here, now, in this room? Somebody tell me. Well, I'm talking, and you're listening. Only, of course, it's not that. Because you are pretending to listen. But actually, you're noticing the person who's come in. So am I. You're thinking, oh dear, I had too much lunch, I'm a bit tired, I'm in the afternoon slump. Or, I didn't have enough lunch, I wish I'd had some more biscuits and tea. Or, oh God, perhaps I won't get a taxi tomorrow. Or, I hope my wife's alright, or I hope my daughter's alright, or I hope my husband's alright, or I hope the dog's alright, or how am I going to get home? All that is going on in your head. Or, my God, my ankle hurts. Or, my brain hurts, or my soul. All that is going on, and I'm trying to talk to you, but I'm not just talking to you, am I? I'm watching you, and I'm looking at you as well. You are not the nameless audience. I'm noticing the people at the front. The clean ones. The ones who got here because they were interested in what I had to say. Who have chosen to sit near enough, and some have got notepads out already. I'm noticing the ones in the middle who are going, that's like, And the ones at the back who are, you know, the dangerous ones, the radicals. Come on, there, Sanford, entertain us. Or else they just want to go to sleep. And those are the interesting ones. And actually, when it comes to questions, the difficult questions will come from back there. And there's the people who've got a quick exit in case they get bored. And the man who came late. What has he been doing that is more interesting than listening to me? What has he been doing that is more interesting than this? So all that is going on. Now, I have invented. Is there any truth at all in my description of this audience? Or is it a creative conceit to make you laugh, to give you something to latch on to? Or is it somewhere in the middle? It's somewhere in the middle. So we admit that even in something as basic as a lecture, we are in between truth and creativity. We are in between truth and fiction all the time. And actually that is true for our entire lives. I'll come back to that in a minute. Edward Carpenter, I think it was, who said it first, that every article of clothing, every word we speak, every item of food we eat, every building we are in, began as a thought in somebody's mind, as a creative thought. And actually, everything that is began as a creative thought. The word is, what is it? Is, I haven't got a blackboard. The word is, it's a straight line, a curly line, and a dot. And yet it's supposed to sum up the entire nature of human existence. And that, of course, was creative. I know it came from the Latin and it was a yes and all that est, but it doesn't matter. At some point, we cannot escape from our creativity. So, oh look, I don't embarrass the person, but I have noticed that up towards that, there is a man who is so clearly in lust with a lady two rows in front of him. He has been watching her much more than me. And look, you turn round immediately because you want to see. You want to see. Why do you want to see? Because you need the creativity from me. From the earliest moment of your childhood, that moment when you suddenly thought, my God, there is no God, there is no meaning, you need the story. Why do we tell our children bedtime stories? Yes, it's to calm them down. What are we doing? They're giving them a sense of meaning. And we need it at every moment of our lives. So if I've got a juicy bit of meaning there, you are trying to look at it. So our friend is looking at the back of this dear lady's head, and what happened? She turns. She looks at him. Their eyes meet. He stands. He steps over the He embraces her. He kisses her. Deeply, longly, and passionately. Everybody in the room has turned round by now. Men and women sigh. And over there, somewhere, Tennessee Williams looks on and says, oh God, I wish I was that woman. Or maybe it's Gene Robinson, I don't know. doesn't. Maybe he steps down to her, and she stands up, and she gouges out his eyes, and the blood pours from them. And all the women in the room sing praises to the Lord. And 90% of the men turn away in pity and fear and go home to their houses. And the other 10% take out their mobile phones, take photos, and send them to the news of the world. Make a lot of money. And I've invented all that. And we are all inventing things like that. What if, what if, what if, what if, what if? We are swimming in creativity. We are all part of it. We are like a group of children in a swimming pool, splashing around. And until you acknowledge that you're splashing around in the water and enjoy it over you, you don't know what's straight. You all know there's no point trying to teach creativity on the side of the pool. You have to wait here in the water. So let's just do a little tiny experiment about a little bit about my work, and maybe for time a little bit about visual arts. I need 2 volunteers. You will not be made to look foolish, I promise you. I need 2 volunteers. Now, why do you hesitate? You hesitate at some level because of the fear of judgment, even if it's your own self-judgment. I'm sorry, when you die, St. Peter is not going to be there. You know, he's not going to be there judging you, not. But my God, how much of our lives do we spend hesitating when there is no fear? I have told you, you're not going to look foolish. Am I inventing that? Am I cruel? Am I a sadist? I don't think Mary would advise me if that was the case. 2 volunteers, yes, thank you. Thank you.
I denied because I was wondering whether there was anybody more exhibitionist than myself.
Thank you very much. Come to the table, make yourselves comfortable. Okay. Well, actually, before we go to the picture, let's have a look at the volunteers. Thank you very much indeed, David and Amanda. And could we notice immediately, please, that this is David and this is Amanda. David is not Amanda. Amanda is not David. They are not the 2 volunteers. This is so important that when we look at these 2 people, we see 2 extraordinary pieces of human creation. And it is a privilege for us to be allowed to look at you. Right. And I'm going to ask you to do something that's very straightforward. And I'm going to ask you, in fact, I'm going to give you an instruction, a very simple instruction. And when you do it, you don't force anything. You just let happen what happens. And if nothing happens at all, that is fine. Don't tell me a story, don't say you have to act or anything like that. This isn't a theatre workshop, that's Mary Lloyd later on this afternoon. Okay? And people watching, will you watch incredibly carefully? And don't skim from one to the other. Maybe watch David for a few moments and notice what happens, and then maybe watch Amanda or the other way around, or you may stay all the time with Amanda, it doesn't matter. Okay. Alright, the situation is this, you're in a lecture room. So this is your lecture. The only difference is the lecturer is up there. You don't know each other. And as you are listening, it starts to get hotter. And just show me what would happen. Don't feel you have to act it. Just show me how you would behave if it was getting hotter. And freeze. What if we see anybody, please describe, do not use the word they, that is forbidden. You use the word Amanda or David. Anybody, what did you see? Yes?
Amanda.
She adjusted her legs with her arms. Yes, yes, anything else? Shout it out. David moved his t-shirt. just mentioned the code.
Yeah.
Anybody else? He waved his hand in front of his face, and in fact he touched his nose, didn't he? Amanda touched her hair. Were they the same? If you were scientists from Mars looking at them, were they the same? No. Did we believe them?
Yes.
We believed them both. Stop, freeze. What's happened now? Look, what's happened now? What did she just do? She crossed her legs. These are two human beings at exactly the same point. At this moment, in a lecture, in a workshop lecture demonstration. Look at Amanda. Her legs are crossed. Her fingers are splayed. There is tension. She's sitting forward. The centre of gravity is quite high. David is more relaxed. His legs are apart. His hands are here. She's got an expression of quizzical enjoyment. You've got an expression of complete baffle. And all I've done is say it's getting hotter. And we have that extraordinary richness. Now, if I were to say to you, you're at primary school, will you act with it's a hot day? What would happen? You start to go, I want a drink of water. All that nonsense. That is what's called play acting. This is allowing the human behaviour that is innate within you to be expressed. Creativity is no more and no less than that. The challenge is how deep you allow it to go. And we're talking about truth. I don't actually believe in the truth. We're talking about the representation of truth overcoming. It is recognised by you out there. How are you feeling? You alright? Is it interesting? Creativity is interesting if it's coming from yourself. It's much more interesting than doing fake play acting. You get bored very quickly. But what you have to do is you have to trust yourself. I'm not going to ask you to do this. But supposing I said to you now, I'm going to give you instruction, show me how you would behave if you were told you had a terrifying, incurable illness, or that your cat had died, or you realised that you were so deeply in love with a woman or a man at the back of the room that if they didn't turn towards you, you were going to die. You know, supposing I said, play a love scene. You'd need some rehearsal. You wouldn't want to do it for the first time in front of everyone. Because creativity is very personal. It is like taking your clothes off. And if you do it well, you are revealing yourself. And nobody more than actors. Actors have no instrument beyond their bodies and themselves. They don't have a musical instrument, they don't have a canvas, they don't have a book in which they're typewriting. They are revealing themselves. It is in that sense the purest of all art forms. And I would say one of the most difficult. And you've been doing it. You've been acting, getting hot. You have. Now, as a director, I'm then to work with them. What am I going to do? I'm going to say, do it like this. Of course I'm not. I'm going to see what they did individually and maybe ask them to make it bigger. Let's say it's too little if it's for a television camera. I might say, actually, the quivering of your head, is enough. But what I'm going to do is observe meticulously what they are doing. And I believe that's a fundamental part of creativity, is to pay absolute attention, respect to the people you're working with. And that may lead to compassion. It may sometimes lead to incomprehension. I work with the Russians. They were fabulous. But God, I didn't understand what they were going on about sometimes. It may lead to anger. But as long as you're honest in the expression of that, you can continue to go deeper. Thank you very much. You're not going away yet. No. Okay, let's look at another art form. I have brought a picture. So we're going to look at the picture. Well, they're going to look at the picture because they're volunteers, so you just talk about yourself. Okay. There is the picture. Would you like to just hold it? Okay. Now, this is not a fine art class. This is not a great, this is not by Monet. This is actually a painting by, I would say, an amateur artist. That's all I want to say to you. While they're looking at the picture, you can look at the picture too. You can look at this side. You just hold it up a little bit. I'm just interested in what you see on this side of the picture. Because actually, when you go to your granny's house, and you lift down the pictures off the wall, you turn it, often the label on the back of the paint picture is much more interesting, the label of the picture frame. This one says, Pembridge Frameries, Pembridge Road, London, 01727. And it's a bit of old sash board, and it's got red paint. And it's hardboard. And it's been rather nicely done. It's obviously been done for mesh, and it's a gilded frame. A sort of modern gilded frame. Now, there's a whole fantasy. You may see something else completely. If you happen to be the world's expert hardboard, you might have a coin stringer. Or if you're a picture framer, this will be more interesting to you than the other side. So creativity is about where you're at. Now, Mary, could you perhaps hold it so that they can be released from it a little bit? Just hold it here. What I want you to do is describe to the room this picture and what it says to you. And we're not a fine art class. I don't want you to say it's a post-impressionist or it's gouache or it's, you know, it's got a bit of Odilon Redon or something. I just want you to describe it as a picture. What do you see? And maybe a sentence at a time. And would you shout them out or do we need the microphone? Is this one all right?
It's a girl in profile.
Is that one?
Is it on?
It's a girl in profile.
Yeah, a few seconds.
With bare shoulders, red hair.
And some red and some yellow flowers.
And you can see also her hand at the bottom of the picture. And apart from that, it's all kind of vague pink.
Okay. Talk a little bit more about the girl.
She's slightly smiling, lips turning up rather than down. It's a line drawing of colour on it. She's gazing out of the frame.
What does the picture make you feel, if anything?
It's a strange expression. She looks a bit inquisitive to me, but I can't tell really whether she's happy or sad. Can't tell.
Anything more, Amanda?
I think she's probably looking more thoughtful.
Do you like it? It's no obligation.
I wouldn't rave about it.
No, it's acceptable, but I wouldn't pay money for it.
I'm not selling it. I'm actually not mine to sell. All right, would you like to see it?
Yes.
If you need to come closer, come closer. Is it what you imagined?
No.
Do you prefer this picture or the picture that is in your head? Hands up those who prefer the one that's in your head. Hands up the one people who prefer this one. About half and half.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
They said it was not what they imagined.
Yes.
But how would they assess the accuracy of the descriptions we gave?
Oh, of course. Of course. How would you assess the accuracy? I mean, you know, That's going on to a further conversation. What is interesting is that some of you would prefer the picture that is in your own head. What does that show? It shows that your creative imagination is every bit as rich as this painting. Now you may say, but I don't have the draftsmanship skills. These are fairly basic. This is not a highly, highly skilled painter. It's actually a portrait of Ellen Terry, the actress. You may not have those actual practical skills, but that's a slightly separate matter. You have the creative ability. I want to say thank you very much to these two and let them go back to this. Thank you very much. So, What are you going to do with it? What are you going to do with that creativity in you? Some of you may be going to go off and leave painting class. Some of you may not feel you've got any access in that area at all. I'll never be any good. My pictures will never be as successful as Tate Modern or the ones I saw this morning on that. Oh, but as a matter of fact, look at that painting. What do we see there? That's a fascinating one. What's the title of that?
Blank.
Blank? Somebody else?
Snow, study in white.
Writer's block. You can see all sorts of things.
Waiting, exactly.
Polar bear standing next to an igloo. It's always there. What I'm saying is that some of you saw the lecture this morning with absolutely magnificent high art being projected onto this screen. How can you compare your creativity to that? I want to say to you, your creativity has nothing whatsoever to do with successful art. Your art may be successful. It may not. Look at Van Gogh, really, after his death, wasn't it? Look at Emily Dickinson, probably the greatest female poet ever. She published 6 poems in her lifetime and left how many thousand? I don't know, that's the second question. How many thousand poems did Emily Athene Sylo, great actress who lived to the age of 101, she published a book called On Comedy, which was actually a guide for actors and how to behave. And she said in it, if I get the quote quite right, she said, "The world grants you your success. Only you know your achievements and which is the most important." And as far as creativity is concerned, it's so, so crucial that we understand this. Success in the theatre is a 4-star or a 5-star review from Michael Billington. It's your name in lights in the West End. It's, or even more, your name above the title of a sitcom when you're earning a fortune. It's winning an Oscar. Achievement might be getting an audition, or getting the part, or remembering your lines if you're over 65. And, of course, we all have extraordinary achievements in our lives. We are made of them. An achievement might be giving up smoking. An achievement might be getting divorced. An achievement might be staying married. An achievement might be recovering from rape or sexual abuse or a burglary. Some of you may have had great achievements just to get here. If you were caring for something, or getting, if you had a particularly difficult journey, that is a great achievement. These are things we don't often talk about. It's not polite to do so. But of course they are what makes us what we are. And I ask you just for one moment to think, and we want to talk about this aloud, I promise you. Think of an achievement in your own life. Just think of an achievement in your own life. And think of the energy that was behind that achievement. And this is a real leap of creativity. Just see if there is any link between the nature of that energy and the imaginary picture that you had in your head. Particularly in terms of the emotion or the woman's face that you had in your head. You may have, you may not. What I'm saying is, if you think about your achievements, they are generally things that are very personal and that go straight into your heart. And if you use that as an energy in your creativity, it is pretty limitless. That doesn't mean to say you write a novel about your abandoned child. It doesn't mean that. It probably means you write something about the determination that you had within that. And I think it's our duty to use that creativity in our relationships with everybody else in the world. Not to do what we are told, but to do what we are. Because it's only if we are doing what we really are that we are communicating in absolute honesty with other people. Now, there are some artists who have it easy. People like Tennessee Williams. Because because, you know, he was the first out gay writer in America, and he couldn't have done what he was told to do if he tried. He was sort of exposed before his day, and therefore he became an extraordinarily creative person, not only in creating his own work, but also in creating his own life. And it's interesting, I've got a quotation from him that I will finish with. This is from his memoir. He says, "A man must live through his life's duration with his own set of fears and angers, suspicions and vanities, and his appetites, spiritual and carnal. Life is built of them, and he is built of life. The umbilical cord is a long, long rope of blood that has swung him as an aerialist on an all but endless trapeze, oh, such a long, long way from the first living organism that gave birth to another. Define it as the passion to create, which is all that we know of God. Is that an agnostic thing to say? I think not, and perhaps you will accede to my claim of exceptional honesty, both as a writer and a man." And very touchingly he adds, "And if you knew me, you would find me a man who values kindness and patience with others." Thank you very much.
We have a bit more than 10 minutes. If there are any people who want to be brave enough to ask Patrick a question, or who would like to give their own reflections on anything that's come up in the past minute, anybody? Rob.
Do you offer one at the back?
Back row.
Yes.
I knew a bit of back row.
The Marquis de Sade, I think, was a very creative person, very imaginative. No doubt truly honest to himself and authentic. But is that an admirable kind of life? It seems to me, where you're coming from, I might have got you wrong, but you seem to be saying, if you are authentic to yourself, live out your true self, somehow that's all you need to do, that's the only important value in the world. And it seems to miss out a hell of a lot of other things, like virtue and goodness and all sorts of things.
Well, of course, the very last sentence of Tennessee Williams is, "What I value above all else is kindness and patience with others." So of course I would disagree. Of course you have a choice what you do with your creativity. Of course you have. And we all of us have. But I'll tell you this, I can't direct Shakespeare unless I acknowledge the dark side of my own nature. I certainly can't direct Tennessee Williams, and I can't direct any thriller, actually. I can't direct Agatha Christie with any degree unless I acknowledge that I have a dark side. I don't have to indulge it. But if I don't investigate it, the performance will be shallow. If I'm going to play Hamlet and I don't investigate what it would be to commit suicide, I'm not going to do to be or not to be with much authenticity. So of course you're right, but I think you do have to be brave enough to say we're all sinners, if you like, or capable of it. I don't know what anybody else feels. Yes.
Right, another one. The gentleman at the front.
Talking about kindness, people seem to assume that kindness is something which is just given to us, and is assumed that it's a natural thing to be kind. But I think that kindness, like many other things, is something that we learn, and through experience, etc.
I would agree with that, and I think I have to train myself in kindness. Certainly if I'm working with actors who are very vulnerable, and sometimes I get impatient with them, I'm sure, like parents. You know, the greatest human achievement in my view is to bring up children. I have not done it. I'm going to go stand in the corner.
and actually, for parents to maintain constant kindness to their children, I think is an heroic. Yes.
Right. Oh, great. The lady in the middle. We don't want to break the basic CSA's rule that all the men speak in the middle.
So, can there be a kind of negative creativity? That is to say, is there creativity in sort of denying one's own chance of success, of producing things which are visible in the world for the sake of nurturing other people, for which you mentioned bringing up children?
I think that is your creative choice, and the world is full of unsung artists who have spent their lives caring for their children or for other people around them, and that is in itself a very creative choice. And you know, if you are a mother or a father in this room, which is the more creative moment in your life, the moment when you first saw a Monet, or the moment when your child first brought home a little scrawl from primary school, or brought you up a cup of tea on a tray on a Sunday morning, which is extraordinary creative. I know which I choose any day. And we're all full of choices, and of course, I could tell you that I have sacrificed my possibility of family life in order to be a creative artist. It's a load of nonsense, but I can tell you.
Right, anyone else? Just a sec, let's take care of the young lady in the orange.
We're talking about creativity being a force for good, but creativity comes from our imagination. And one of the things that into a state of high anxiety through the powers of one imagination. For example, I have a horrendous rail journey tomorrow. Now, I can work myself up into those ghastly stress if I went through it all things could go wrong. So to a degree, creativity does have that negative aspect.
Yes, look at my white hair and my wrinkles. I would. Any engagement, any profound engagement with human emotions is a dangerous activity. But life is dangerous. You know, I can sit at home and watch Big Brother. That's not dangerous. It pretends to be dangerous, but it isn't dangerous. So anytime anybody lifts a pen to write something, it could be hurtful. I totally agree with you. And I think artists are more willing than many to enter into that anxiety. Listen, the first night when you know the critics are out there, it's very frightening. The last 10 minutes before giving this lecture, I was not exactly a happy person.
We have gentlemen down here. Glad you're working very hard. Thank you.
Yes, I recently attended a lecture by somebody concerned with psychotherapy and ethics, and I think it would be correct to summarize what he's saying very well. You've been engaged in mutual creativity with somebody in a conversation.
Sorry, it's working. The gentleman was suggesting that you could enter into a relationship which is mutually creative, and that he was using this to solve problems in psychotherapy and ethics, which I won't enlarge on. But it's that thought of mutually creating together which I'd like to emphasise.
Well, I think that's true all the time. That's true any time I'm talking to you. We are engaging together, hopefully something creative is coming out of it. And I do believe the arts are profoundly therapeutic in all sorts of ways. And to go back to your point of that, think of James Hillman, great American therapist, who wrote a fantastic book called We've Had 100 Years of Psychotherapy and the World's Getting Worse. A really good book. And he says, like, a bit like Chiron, the wounded healer, that the wound is always a gift. Still a wound, but if you can learn from the wound and you can heal people with the wound. And that is why we go to the theatre or we read a wonderful novel about terrible things. In a sense, the artist is doing it for you. You know, people say to me, why do you go to Greek tragedy? The best explanation of Greek tragedy I ever had was by an American lady poet who translated her name from. And she said, well, it's like the day your mother dies and your wife drives you to the funeral. and there's a traffic jam and you're running late and she turns left instead of right, and you scream so loudly at her that people across the street turn and wait for you to tear her head off and throw it out of the car window. And the rage and the grief are so strong that you could almost do that. And what we do is, we all feel rage and we all feel grief. They are deeply in our souls. If we don't, then we probably have very privileged lives. And by going to see Greek tragedy, we see somebody enacting it for us, so we don't actually have to do it ourselves. So in that sense, it can be very mutually healing, as in a therapy session. Laughter's true too. The same thing works for comedy. It's not just all about glee. I think there is no more... The two healthiest sounds in the world are a newborn baby crying and a full auditorium of people laughing.
Yes.
How do we avoid the temptation of comparing our own achievements with the achievements of others?
We can't avoid it. We all do it all the time. I think we should respect it but not indulge it. And also a bit of it is healthy. You know, if I get a really bad review and I've had a few in my time, if I'm sensible, I will learn from it. But it hurts. It really hurts. Or if I go and see a young director directing a play quite brilliantly, I can feel threatened. But actually, if I then wish, I will think, well, actually, I'm not going to be doing it much longer. How wonderful that that challenge is coming on. And if it's truly thrilling, it's inspiring. It's when it's medium good that all that horrible stuff comes in. Then you either feel, if it's good, you feel jealous. If it's bad, you feel smug.
And it's
not healthy, really. And ultimately, I just have to do the best work I can. You may hate it or you may love it. Come and see Playboy of the Western World from September the 11th at Nuffield Theatre, Southampton. Saturday is the final Saturday. You know, see a fake, you'll get a reduction. Guaranteed. Yeah.
I think these are two quotes from your lecture. We live between truth and fiction, and I don't think I believe in truth. I wonder if you have a notion of truth.
I believe truth can exist at any one moment, but I think that it's changing all the time, and I see that in my own behaviour very graphically. I'm not a philosopher. I really am not. But I'm also aware that in my work, I can see a play. Very interestingly, I saw a play the other day at the Old Red Line, which is an Irish play, which has been such a hit in Ireland. It's done two national tours, and it came to London and has bombed. And clearly in Ireland, it hit a note of truth with its audience, which it didn't hit. And it wasn't about very specifically Irish issues. And that's why a classic, you know, or a new play can work and 10 years later it doesn't work. But the classics are those in which the truths are eternal. I think my saying I don't believe in truth is a very rash statement. And if it's going in the magazine, I'd probably edit it out. I do think we live halfway between truth and fiction, because we all live in fantasy. Fantasy is very different from creativity. Very different. Fantasy is something which is, it serves a different psychological function, but that's another conversation. If you want to know about fantasy, read Streetcar Named Desire, actually, or Playboy of the Western World, where, I mean, what's fascinating. Here's a question for you to finish. Here's a question. You're black. You're 16. You're in Peckham. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. You're walking down the road and they're coming towards you and you realise you're wearing the wrong colour shirt. Is your friend the person who gives you the knife, or is your friend the person who doesn't? And that's the question we've all got to ask ourselves. And what is interesting is that 100 years ago, John Millington Synge wrote a play about a man who discovers heroism by splitting open his father's head to the steel of a spade. I mean, he commits knife crime and is acclaimed a hero in a community. So, you know, they were thinking about it 100 years ago. And an artist can ask that question and investigate that question in a way which is lively. I don't know the answer.
Well, I hope that illustration has made lots of people keen to make a trek to the extreme south, where we get more out of sunshine than any other spot in the British Isles. And I'm afraid we have to close it now, and we're doing the workshop, and Patrick will be leaving almost immediately afterwards, so you won't get much chance to put them all in.
I'm doing the acting workshop as an actor, the drama for that, because I haven't done one since I was at school. I get round them, but I've never done one. Very good.
Terrifying. So.
And thank you for welcoming me to the conference.